Good evening, America. Welcome to the Raucous Podcast.
Live from Friends Next Door.
I'm your host tonight, Mark Levine, with
Garland Nixon
and
Terry D. Kester.
And we are reporting, as I said, live from Ben's Next Door. Now, that's right next door to Ben's Chili Bowl, 1213 U Street Northwest in Washington, D.C. And there are still some empty seats. So if you're anywhere in the neighborhood, please come join us for some good food and some good conversation. And if you stop by, you'll have the chance to challenge us, make a comment, ask a question. Pretty cool, huh? Now, tonight's topic is don't drive while Latino. Why Arizona's radical anti-immigration bill is bad for Arizona, bad for the United States, bad for police, bad for immigrants, bad immigration policy, bad for citizens, unconstitutional, and just, did I say bad?
You did.
Okay,
yeah, it's bad.
Yeah. Before we get to the guts of the topic, though, I want to announce a special announcement, and that is that Maryland Delegate Roger Mano, who's a good friend of mine, a guy I used to work with in Congress, has a very important announcement to make right here on the Raucous Caucus at 7:30 p.m. You're not going to want to miss that. We really look forward to that. All of us at the Raucous Caucus are really honored to have Roger with us today, and I can personally testify to the fact he's a fine, progressive, public servant, and actually a really good guy. So please don't forget that. 7:30 coming up in half an hour. But first, tonight's topic. Arizona has passed the most frightening immigration law in the country. Now, it happens to be unconstitutional because the Constitution prohibits states from going it alone on immigration. But even if it were constitutional, it would lead to horrific racial profiling. All it takes is a, quote, reasonable suspicion, unquote, for the police to stop somebody. Now, imagine, if you will, a third-generation Latino American citizen with a darker skin and a Spanish surname, who has the audacity to take a walk without his wallet, or even worse, a bike ride. He could be stopped by the police for not carrying his official required identification. Now think about naturalized American citizens who have accents. They could be treated even worse. Now police hate this law because it will lead to a vast increase in crimes. Illegal immigrants will be forced in the shadows. They won't be able to be there to testify, tell police about crimes. It will also lead to massive, frivolous lawsuits. Because according to this law, any citizen can sue any official if that citizen just thinks the official isn't doing enough work on immigration. And here I thought Republicans wanted tort reform. Anyway, I somehow doubt...
That is a form of tort reform.
More torts.
Yeah,
more litigation.
Can we sue the governor?
Maybe so. Maybe we should. Anyway, I somehow doubt that the wayward Canadian illegal immigrant will be apprehended. So tonight, I want to talk not just about this particular immigration law, but what our general immigration policy should be. Terry, let me start with you. Do you think this law will lead to racial profiling?
No, you got to be kidding.
Okay, it was a softball question, but go ahead.
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, the sad thing about this law, Mark, more than anything else, is it's a message law. It really is. It's not unlike, you know, the lynchings back during the Jim Crow era. I mean, it's ugly, not putting it quite on the same plane.
But it's not quite that ugly.
But part of that was still just to send a message. I mean, that's really what it was for. That's why he did them in public and everything else. And this is a message law. And I don't think they're even serious about it because they know it's unconstitutional. They know it's not going to stand up in the courts. They're just making it real clear that they don't want Latinos anywhere near them. And it's that biased and it's that racist and it's that pointed. And even if the law is thrown out, it's creating the fear. In fact, already the percentage of Latino immigrants coming into Arizona has dropped way down.
Well, maybe that's exactly what they want.
This is exactly what they want, and that's the purpose.
Gar, let me ask you. First of all, I'm curious to know. I've never asked you this question before. I want to know if you've ever been stopped and you believe you were stopped for driving while black. because most African Americans I know do feel they've been stopped at least once or twice, sometimes more often, for driving while black. And do you think this law will stop people for driving while Latino?
Yes, I was, on more than one occasion.
How many times?
Many occasions.
How often does it happen?
I couldn't count them. I'd say
once
at least 10.
10 no, times.
Let me put it to you like this. When I had an 87 Cougar, it didn't happen. When I bought a 95 BMW, all of a sudden, the whole world changed.
Interesting. So the better car is more likely to get you stopped.
Yeah, that's pretty much what happened. But it doesn't work that way now in Arizona. You don't even have to have a car. Roller skates.
Breathing.
You know, the interesting thing about this here, and that is, the only people that that it's really going to affect are American citizens. It's really going to hurt American citizens. I mean, the reality is, for starters, if we just go just from one aspect alone, it's not that much different than the federal law. The federal law basically says...
Well, no, they require you to carry a card around.
No,
that's different.
But basically, the federal law is, if a law enforcement officer suspects that someone has probable cause to believe that someone is an illegal, an undocumented alien, they can approach the person and they can ask them to identify themselves. That's in the law, certainly. However, this whole thing's changed because law enforcement officers are required to do
it. Yeah, that's a big difference.
Yeah, they're
big
required
difference.
To do it.
And also, I just got to throw in the lawyerly stuff here. A reasonable suspicion is a lesser standard than probable cause,
right.
Just to be clear. So a reasonable suspicion, I don't know, Garland, do you think a reasonable suspicion is a guy with a certain skin color and a certain accent driving a car? A BMW,
well,
maybe?
It's certainly unconstitutional, but now it appears that in Arizona, the law is very clear as far as the position that it puts law enforcement officers in.
Well, let's talk about law enforcement, because it's interesting to me, the Arizona police overwhelmingly opposed this law.
Yep.
Now, you would think police officers, they want to uphold the law, they would support it. But, Terry, what the police say is that witnesses will not come forward. If you've got a rape, or you got a murder, you got some kind of violent crime, and the witness happens to be an illegal immigrant, that illegal immigrant won't come forward and you won't be able to prosecute the crime, so police fear a crime wave. What do you think?
Well, I think it's fascinating to begin with. I mean, particularly Republicans, you know, I mean, the police department is saying to the Republicans constantly, and to Congress in general, on a number of cases, don't pass these laws. Guns, yeah. Assault guns, you know, assault rifles, you know, you don't need assault rifles. Every police organization in the world has opposed that. Yet Congress just bows and kisses the NRA's, you know what, and allows assault rifles everywhere. In terms of the immigration situation, yeah, it's creating fear is what it's meant to do, and it's what is going to happen. It's creating fear in the Latino community. It's raising the fear level in the Latino community. Of course nobody's going to go up to the cops and say, hey, I just saw a crime. I happen to be Latino. You want to see my papers? I don't happen to have them with me. Is that okay? And if you have ever seen any of the documentaries about what it is to be arrested by immigration and to put into one of these prisons that they have for people that they are detaining and or deporting, I mean, it is hell.
Ask you, you used to work for the American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU. Are they going to sue to declare this law unconstitutional?
I'm sure there'll be people standing in line to sue. There'll be so many organizations. I'm sure there's probably already suits been filed. But, you know, you've got a number of things. One of the big issues here is, back again to the Confederate states' rights issue. This is a law that the federal government enforces, and the state's taking it over saying, we're going to enforce it.
I can actually echo that with my pocket constitution here. By the way, if you're here at Ben's, you can see I have my pocket constitution out.
But it's so old, you can't even read
it. Dog-eared constitution.
It is dog-eared because
I think you need
use
to iron
it.
He's just making this up as he goes along.
I use it a lot.
You need
That's
to iron your constitution.
Yeah, right.
Iron spray starch on it.
It's falling apart. Listen, it's my only protection I got. Article 1, Section 8 happens to say that the Congress has the power to establish a uniform rule of naturalization. A uniform rule to decide who is a citizen, who is not a citizen, what to do. A uniform rule very clearly means that Arizona cannot go it alone. You can't have Arizona have one law and New York have another law and Virginia have another law. It just can't be that way.
You know, but
so it's clearly unconstitutional.
You know, but the sad thing, too, is, I mean, there's a reason this is happening. And the reason, again, is the failure of Congress. And we can't deny that because Congress has not passed cohesive or clear immigration policy. You know, even Bush, probably the only good thing that Bush did, close to good, was a reasonable attitude on immigration.
Well, but
and
Terry,
Congress
let me ask
has
you about
never
that.
Passed any clarifying laws.
Let me challenge you on that, because even if Congress were to pass something that, like, George Bush supported or John McCain supported, Ted Kennedy supported, you know, the idea that you have a path to legalization, you pay a fine, that kind of stuff.
Right.
This law is still so much more right-wing, so much more radical than anything Congress would propose. Why do you say this law wouldn't have happened if Congress acted? It seems to me the people behind this law support things way more radical than anything that Congress could ever enact.
They do, but the other thing is they feel the problem. I mean, they're facing the problem on a daily basis, no matter what you think of it. You know, and they feel, rightly so, that the federal government is not doing anything. So, yes, they've taken a more extreme position. I don't agree with it. It's a more radical position. But it is partially in reaction to the fact that, once again, Congress is not doing its
Garland,
job.
Is this Congress's fault?
Let me throw this in, and because Terry made a good point about the people behind this bill. And I'm going to say, I saw it on the Rachel Maddow show. I might as well say exactly where I saw it. You can go online and find that video if you want. The individual, the legislator who actually introduced this bill, they had a picture of him hugging a gentleman, hugging an individual. I mean, it was, you know, a friendly hug, kind of like he's my buddy kind of hug. The next picture they showed of this man was at a neo-Nazi march with one of these Nazi uniforms on and a bunch of Nazi swastikas around.
The guy that introduced
the guy that introduced the bill
is a friend of a neo-Nazi.
His friend is a neo-Nazi.
Don't you have neo-Nazi friends? Don't we all have neo-Nazi friends?
You're right.
I can't think of any I have right now, but I'll tell you this. I was on Fox today, and a bunch of them seemed to write in. So, maybe they're my
And furthermore, friends. The organization that helped write the bill, FAIR, is a white supremacist group. So wouldn't you really see where this legislation came from? It came from, for lack of a better word, some far right-wing kooks.
Now, Garland, you know what they're going to say. They're going to say, how dare you call us white supremacists? We just want to enforce our borders. We just want to make sure the laws are applied. We don't hate the Latino.
We're just marching around with swastikas.
We just hate the Mexican immigrant who comes in without papers.
And the other problem is, again, the federal government, to me, has failed. And I'm not trying to justify this law. To me, this law, again, is a message law, as ugly as it is. But, you know, as people have pointed out, it's the employers, again. There are people throughout Arizona and throughout the country, particularly in terms of agricultural workers and everything else, that are making a fortune off of illegal immigrants.
Well, that's true.
You know, and nothing is done to stop that.
I got to throw something in on that. I got to throw something in because, you know, I talked to my criminal justice class for an hour today about this law.
Was that during recess?
We have recess in college.
Oh,
it's always recess in college.
Yeah, right.
They'd be drinking beer if we had recess.
I'm worried about my nephew already. Go ahead. Right.
So at any rate, but let's talk about what the same thing that'll make you laugh will make you cry. Be careful what you pray for. You might just get it. Okay, we've got 14 million undocumented aliens in this country.
Yeah.
Let's just say that we are so good at enforcing this law against employers that we're able to stop every single one of them from working. None of them can get a job. None of them can make a dime. We got 14 million people, in this country, and none of them can work. Do you think that may just have an effect on crime? And I don't know how much you know about El Salvador, but they ain't going back to El Salvador. Take my word for it. You're better off in the United States without a job than you are in El Salvador. There's not even anybody to rob in El Salvador.
Well, that brings up an interesting point, too.
So what do we do?
Does this not go back to NAFTA? To a large degree.
But where are we now?
We haven't solved any of the problems that created the problem, which is what's really sad about our failed government.
We haven't solved
any of the problems. It's true in the financial situation. It's true in every other situation. We don't solve problems that create the problem.
I'll tell you what, Terry. In the second half, I'm going to give every one of us and the audience a chance to give our preferred immigration solution.
To the streets.
All right.
Who would have
in the streets, Terry.
Who would have guessed that?
Oh, okay.
Come on.
All right.
Unless you're Latino. Wait a minute. Unless you're Latino. Because if you go to the streets, you're going to get locked.
Latinos, don't go to the streets.
You're going to get locked up.
Don't be driving while Latino. Right. Don't be in the streets.
Breathing while Latino. That's
before we get to how to fix the problem, though, I want to deal with the actual problem and what they're doing in Arizona and why they're so racist out in Arizona. All right? You do have people who are worried that their jobs are being undercut. Labor unions, for example. I'm a big fan of labor unions. And yet they're afraid that if you have undocumented labor that's coming in, and they earn lesser wages, and they're mistreated by their employers, and they're willing to do that, that undercuts legitimate American citizens who are trying to get a job at a decent wage, and at the same time not be mistreated by employers. Because why would the employer hire an American citizen that if they make them work 60, 70, 80 hours without paying overtime, you know is going to complain to the government, when they can hire this nice Mexican illegal who doesn't dare complain because they could ship them across the borders? Isn't there a legitimate, dare I say, progressive argument for worrying about this problem?
But the same people who make that argument don't want them to work at all. the same people who make this argument that you're saying they don't want them to work at all. That's more of an argument that says there should be some regulation. They shouldn't be taken advantage of and mistreated in the workplace. Furthermore, the whole idea that they're taking somebody's jobs. Be honest.
They're taking our jobs.
I don't know a whole lot of people that are standing in line to pick grapes.
In fact, we're
I like grapes.
We're losing our job here on Raucous Caucus any day now. Dude, you know.
Well, we're replacing.
Are you going to pick grapes, Terry?
No, yeah, no. Well, no, illegal aliens are going to come over here.
We're
and
replacing
take orders,
we're replacing Terry with an undocumented worker.
Are we?
I can?
You know, they'll work for less. I hear that. And we can abuse them more.
They can't work for less than we're working for. Are you kidding
but
me?
But we can abuse them more, right. Terry, than he even abuse you. So right. That's a pretty good thing.
They can't fire us. Slaves must be sold.
Yeah, right.
They can sell us off.
One issue, though, that hasn't really been discussed about all of this that I always find amazing is this lawsuit stuff. Now, maybe just because I'm a lawyer, I find this interesting. But the idea that any citizen of the United States can sue any official for saying, you're not enforcing the immigration law enough. I could say, you, sheriff of Maricopa County or anyone else.
Oh, he is.
I can tell you why it's in there.
You know, I think I should just sue him for being a jerk.
I can tell you why it's in there. I can tell you why it's in there. Because one of the organizations, FAIR, that helped write the bill.
I love that term, FAIR.
You know how they make
the unfair FAIR.
You know how they make their money?
Donations?
Suing.
Government
officials?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how they fund everything, suing government officials.
So when
they helped write the law, they slipped a little something in there for themselves.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing.
A little cookie there.
The law is obviously unconstitutional. We talked about the fact, it's right there, uniform laws of naturalization. You can also, by the way, know that supremacy clause, the United States Constitution is very clear that federal law trumps state law. So clearly this law will not go into effect, even with the five crazy renegade Supreme Court justices we have right now. I don't know
about that, buddy.
I know. I mean, they chose Bush over Gore. I get it. They're renegades. But even they, I don't think, can hold this law constitutional. So when this law goes into does not go into effect. When they try to make it go into effect, somebody sues, and they stop this law in progress. What then happens next? Is the goal just to inflame people? To make people angry? To make people riot and try to harm illegal immigrants? Is that the goal, Terry?
Yeah.
Is that why they did it?
The goal is to create fear, whether it's fear amongst the whites or whether it's fear amongst the Latinos. The goal is to create
Who
fear.
Who does that help when you create fear?
Republicans.
How does fear help? Why does fear always help Republicans? Why can't hate and fear?
Because
just
they're
want
crazy.
Okay.
I'll
take another angle here. If you want to talk about,
it's an IQ thing. I don't know.
If you want to talk politics, let me take another angle. I think what this does is it exposes a crack in the Republican Party that if the Democrats are smart, they can take advantage of and drive a wedge between the party. Clearly, the Republican Party, when it comes to immigration, you're going to have the top wealthy corporate people who want a guest worker program. George Bush, who represents them, wanted a guest worker program. Yep. They want.
If they can't get slave labor, indentured servitude will work.
Okay.
Exactly.
But you have the teabag, the far right wing, shall we say racists, who are dead set against it. If the Democratic Party really works on this bill and really kind of drives it home and brings immigration up and talks about it, it's going to drive a wedge between the party. Those in Congress, if they go towards the people who are giving them money, which they have to do, the corporate America, they're going to have to move towards a guest worker program. However, if they do that, they'll inflame the teabaggers and they'll tear them to pieces. So I think it's a political
divide
operation.
Divide and conquer.
And the other thing is this. When something like this happens that is so outrageous, sometimes that's what it takes to make a point so that you can address issues. So is it bad? Yes. But it's so outrageous that it makes a point. And in a way, since it should, constitutionally, I don't think it'll ever go into effect, it should create an opportunity for people to address this issue.
But wait a minute. Aren't there 13 other states that have some laws that are pretty close to this?
It doesn't work, though. You cannot have states regulate immigration. It's very clear. I mean, they really can't get much clearer in the Constitution.
Well, I know it's not constitutional.
And they require law enforcement officers to do that. See, that's a big part of the law, that they're required to
do that.
They're
kind of deputizing the state authorities. Let me remind everybody here that this is public, of course. We're here at Ben's. If you want to join us, just drive on down to 1213 U Street, and our audience will be able to ask a question. You have a question or comment, you want to say something, please don't hesitate to step up to that microphone. And we have someone. Oh, no.
Wait a minute.
That's what happens. If you invite him to come up,
But Mark, I'm thinking he looks kind of foreign. Maybe we have to lock this guy up.
That's right. Where's your card?
You got a card? Yeah.
Talk to us.
Queen of Spades will work for us.
My point on the immigration issue is kind of simple.
We want to give us your name.
I'm sorry. My name is Anthony.
Hi, Anthony.
Hello, Anthony. Welcome to the Rockets Caucus.
Thank you kindly. The same people who are, you know, the right-wingers, teabaggers, you know, Republicans, et cetera, who are focused on this immigration enforcement angle are also consider themselves to be fiscally responsible. And they discuss the issue about how these people are supposed to be warehoused, how they're supposed to be shipped and tracked and whatever the process is from taking you from the, you know, the state of origin or the state of arrest to their home country involves cost. Same situation with this idea, this fallacy that you can actually deport the 12, 10, 14, whatever million amount of illegal immigrants to mostly South America, but there is Canada, Central America, Europe, you know, because of course we're gonna gather them all up.
Supposedly.
But nevertheless, you know, there's some cost involved in that too. You have to adjudicate these people. So, you know, if you're a fiscal conservative, you wouldn't necessarily be pushing these issues because your local, you know, Ohio and them, right. You know, will have to pay for this.
Anthony, I think you have hit the nail on the head. You are talking about the obvious contradictions among the far right. And you know what? You might just hurt their brains. So I don't know that we should let them hear this broadcast because the so-called Tea Party supporters supposedly believe exactly in less government, in less intrusive government. They want to give everybody a gun. Does that include illegal immigrants, by the way? They want to give everybody a gun, and they don't want government agents enforcing anything. But at the same time, they want government agents going around the entire nation, finding 14 million people, separating those that are illegal from those that just happen to have accents and Spanish surnames, and rounding them up and paying for it at enormous cost. You're exactly right. No one has said how they're going to pay for it, and that to me brings home the whole idea of who the Tea Party people are. They're not the most practical people in the world.
Well, one of the things they want to do in Arizona now is they want to, sometimes you'll have undocumented aliens who are sick, and they'll go to the hospital because by law, you have to be treated, they have to treat you if you go to the emergency room. One of the things they want to do is place law enforcement officers at the emergency room so that when they come there, they can nab them and lock them up. But let me throw this in. Number one.
Oh, my God.
But number one, they won't go, so they'll die. But number two, let's just say they're successful. You're talking about a man who was a law enforcement official. We grab this guy. He's sick. And we lock him up.
Oh, great idea.
Who's responsible for his health care now?
The contagion. That's right, the state.
If you get sick or an illness and you don't have money to pay, you can go commit a crime and get locked up because the government is required to give you health care, dental, everything when you're in jail.
What a great reason to commit a crime.
Hey,
and you get to enjoy the benefits of the crime if you're not caught.
You get universal single payer.
You either keep the money or you get free health care.
Yeah, good friends of mine.
Win-win.
In the terminology of good friends of mine, it's three hots and a cot.
Three hots and a cot. That's a lot better than what they have now.
And Mark. You know. If you have something serious like leukemia or breast cancer or something that's life-threatening,
you better commit a crime.
It's worth your while to go to jail.
You better commit a crime.
Hey, look, you do 5 years and you get out, you're still alive.
You know,
Other than that, you get no treatment.
A little side note. Do you know elderly people are actually doing that in Japan? Have you read about that?
No way.
No.
Yeah.
Committing crimes to get health care?
Yes, because they want to get housing and health care because they don't have good housing. They have the health care, but they don't have good housing. You know, they commit a crime. They get arrested. They're into a nice institution.
Yeah, that's one thing I've never understood about the right wing. They always say, no, we don't want to help the homeless. We don't want to make sure people
lock
get
them up.
We don't want to give people health care. And yet we give them all that in prison.
Yep.
So, I
can
think of a greater incentive to do a crime.
You're forgetting prisons today are for profit.
That's true.
They're making money.
They are off our taxpayers.
And the more prisoners they have, the more money they get. It's the American dream.
We're getting a little far afield, though, on the question of immigration. You're absolutely right.
What we're getting into is unintended consequences.
Well, that's exactly right. So you have fewer police on the streets because they're busy trying to enforce immigration laws.
They're locking up innocent
American citizens.
They're down at the hospital arresting poor sick people. Showing
up. And able to testify because they're afraid they're illegal immigrants. Mm-hmm. You've got more people committing crimes because it is profitable for them to do so. And this is the best part of all, because it encourages Latinos to commit crimes, then the people at FAIR and the racists who passed this bill can say, oh, look at the Latinos, they're all criminals.
And yeah, then they can get their guns out.
You got to add one.
They can go out and protect
and they can
democracy.
Make sure the illegal immigrants get their guns, too. Well, and I'm just looking at all the bright side of this bill.
No, well, you know what?
How can an immigrant get a gun? He would have to show identification.
No, they go to the gun show.
That's right.
They
okay.
just go in.
You
can
this is getting scary.
You got to add something. Along with this, they passed a concealed carry law in Arizona,
right. Oh, yeah.
So because anyone can walk around with a concealed.
Hey.
At the same time they did this,
hey, we have to
anyone can walk around with a concealed
gun. We have
the same thing in Virginia. Come on.
Oh well, I'm across the river right now in D.C.
Yeah.
So I don't go to Virginia. That's a good thing.
That's since they elected Bob McDonald.
I just saw my good friend Roger Mantle walk in the room. We used to
work day by day, side by side.
Working on the House Judiciary Committee. It
but we won't
really
hold that
cool,
against him.
Roger,
yeah, you know,
to see you,
you
here, to see someone of my ilk actually make it. As you see, I haven't made it. I'm slumming on Fox News, but you actually are a voting representative of government. I think that's very cool. This has been a really good discussion, both of you, I got to say. And we're going to talk more about it and with our audience in the second half right here live at Ben's. Folks, you can still make it on time, all right? 1213 U Street, you can still make it. Coming up after the break, Roger Mantle, who, by the way, I don't just know, but Garland, you know the guy
very,
too,
very
you?
Well. We've done a lot of health care work together.
You've done health care work together.
Yes, sir.
A single payer, I
You better
I
believe
presume.
It.
All right.
I don't know him at all, and I'm not going to vote for him until I know a lot more about him. I'm sorry, Roger.
Terry, are you
I'm
from
sorry.
Missouri? Is it the Show Me State? Is it?
Yes.
No, he's from the Bob McDonald State.
I
we don't want
Missouri.
Him to vote for anybody.
There you,
you
go. That, so that explains
you
it.
You didn't know that?
No, apparently everyone.
St. Louis Cardinals.
I guarantee you, you're gonna like Roger when you hear him.
Okay.
He's coming back after the break. He has a very important announcement to make. He decided to make it right here on the Raucous Caucus. Maybe he needs, I don't know, maybe that doesn't go well for his judgment. I don't know.
That shows he's a man of good taste.
Oh, is that right.
Obviously,
okay.
Taste
right.
and intelligence.
That's good. You
got my vote.
You won't want to miss that. That's coming up in just a minute or two. And when we come back, after Roger's incredible announcement, whatever it is, we'll find out. We are going to hear from Terry Kester, from Garland Nixon,
uh-oh.
From
uh-oh.
Mark Levine,
oh, no.
and from everyone in our audience. And heck, we're going to ask Roger Mantle, too, even though it's not a state issue. What immigration policy should be in America, what we should do about the fact that we do have 14 million undocumented, is it even a problem, what should we do about it? So we're going to have all of that. You won't want to miss that. And like I said, you can come down to Ben's next door and listen to us live.
12th
and
you.
Join in the conversation. And we'll be right back with more of the Raucous Caucus. Woo!
Yeah.
Right after this.
What happens when your DNA is taken and harvested without your knowledge? What do they do with it? When a simple transaction means giving more information than you feel is necessary, what do they do with that information? Who has access to your medical records? What do they do with it? How concerned are you? Join hosts Garland Nixon of Raucous Caucus, Joya Jefferson Newry, and me, Gloria Minot, along with experts in these areas, as they help you navigate medical records privacy, the sale of consumer data, and the role of the National Security Agency and other government agencies in your daily lives. It's Garland Nixon, Joya Jefferson Newry, and me, Gloria Minot. That's this Thursday, April 29th, during WPFW's Public Affairs Mini Drive from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., right here on 89.3 FM. This Thursday, April 29th, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Join us.
Why can't I say what I mean? Why fell into the groove.
Welcome back to the Ruckus Caucus, hey, live at Denver Next Door. 1213 U Street. Still
hey, get
time
Ruckus
to join
out
us.
Out there, gang. Come on.
And we are joined with someone who I used to work with 9 years ago. Yeah. When I was legislative counsel to Barney Frank on the House Judiciary Committee. Yeah. And Roger was with Sheila Jackson Lee and maybe someone else, too. Yeah. Who else did you work for, Roger? This is Roger Mano, I should announce.
Yeah.
Roger Mano, he is a delegate to the Assembly of Maryland.
Yes.
And I know you got an important announcement. Before we get to your announcement,
okay.
Tell just what do you remember about our days working? Talk about me a little, basically.
Oh, for pity's sakes.
You don't want me to tell
no,
me story.
No, we'll keep him quiet.
I don't mean to talk about me, but just, but you know, it's really
I'd
cool.
I'd be happy to. You know,
you're
I'm
so
on the air.
But you know what? That happened, Mark.
Your career
cool
will be over then,
buddy.
It's just
cool to have someone of my ilk, I guess, you know, working here. Remember, we were in the Judiciary Committee. We were just talking about it in that tiny little room.
Yes.
We were in the minority at the time, so they the Republicans gave us very small digs. I don't know
Mark,
if you're...
Mark, you're still in the minority.
We'll get to that. I don't know if you want to share any memories from that day or anything. Who'd you work for besides Jackson?
I worked for Congressman Sanford Bishop.
That's right.
From Georgia. Great Democrat from Georgia. Very briefly for Mr. Nadler from New York.
Oh, that's right.
And did a lot of work with, but didn't work directly for, both of us, worked with Congressman Conyers.
Absolutely.
Who endorsed me when I ran for office. I was so honored to have that endorsement because we worked on health care for all those years.
And apparently you worked with Garland, too, on that.
Yes, that's right. We did some TV work. We did an entire show that was so good it ended up on the White House website.
Really?
Yeah,
that's right.
The question
that's
is,
right.
though,
or
Roger, healthcare. Why have you been ignoring me all these years? I mean, you know, come on. I mean, what is it?
Again, do you want me to say this on the air?
No.
Terry, for the same reason that we ignore you.
Oh, okay.
But
let's get right to Roger.
Roger has something important to say.
What is your announcement, Roger?
Well, for the last 4 years, I've been honored to serve the 110,000 residents in the 19th Legislative District in Maryland.
Where is that, just so people know?
It's Central Montgomery County, Silver Spring, Olney, Leisure World, Gaithersburg, Durwood,
okay.
Four Corners, Kemp Mill, and it's been a wonderful experience. We've addressed many of the challenges that are facing the community. We've got the best schools in the country, the best teachers in the country. We've got decent economic development. We're dealing with this healthcare thing on the federal level that we've worked on for years and years and years. We had a pretty good year this year.
Oh, yeah.
Covering 31 million people. But we still have extraordinary challenges. And I think that we can do better. And most of the things that I've done successfully in my life, I've done through leadership and working together collaboratively, collectively, to bring people together, whether it's healthcare reform, jobs and economic development. And I think that we can and should do better in the state of Maryland. And so what I've tried to do over my 4 years is to work, build coalitions, again, whether it's healthcare or education, economic development. And I think we need to do a little bit better in that area. And it's with deep humility and extreme gratitude to the folks who sent me here and those whose shoulders I'm standing on, that I announced my election for the state senate in Maryland, 19th Legislative District.
All right. Hooray.
And he's an official member of the Ruckus Caucus now.
I thought you were running for president. I was like, no, our first. No, not against Obama. Absolutely not. Yeah. So that is that the same district as the Assembly district? Is it the same borders pretty much?
It is. It's the same constituency, okay. 110,000 people. Maryland's kind of a unique state because most of the senators and the House members represent the same electorate.
I see.
So it's not a larger geographic, but it is. It's a body of the legislature that I think needs fresher voices and more folks who are very active in leadership on issues behind the scenes. Those who sort of stand on principle between votes when it really matters.
Roger, let me ask you, what would you do differently from the current incumbent there in Maryland? I have to admit, I'm not a citizen of the state of Maryland, so I don't know as much about it. Certainly as, anyone, and definitely not you, but what would you do differently? What would you bring as a different voice to the Senate in Maryland?
You know, what I've tried to do my whole career, and certainly the last 4 years, is to lead by bringing people together. You know, one of the things you learn as an activist, we know, and now I know as a legislator, is you can't do it by yourself. And those who try may be successful to a certain extent, but they didn't get as far as they could have gone if they had built the coalition. So in the case of legislative districts in the state of Maryland, you know, those that are most successful, you have a senator and three House members, three delegates who work very closely together to represent the interests of the district. And as the senator for the 19th legislative district, I want to be the senator that brings together my delegates, activists, folks from around the state to weigh in on and to help each other to address the very serious challenges before us. And, you know,
is it an open seat that you're running for?
It is not. It's a Democratic primary. You know, Montgomery County is a unique county because all the elected officials happen to be Democrat. And I don't think you take that for granted. But
what would you do differently from the current incumbent? Let's get a difference.
As I said before, I'm very much focused on bringing folks together.
And you don't think the incumbent's doing that as well as, as?
Well, it's about teamwork.
Okay.
And, you know, as I said before, you can't do it alone. And the delegates that I've served with, and the in my district and around the state, many of the senators around the state, we work collaboratively to represent the interests of the state, to try to get the best deal from the federal government, represent our folks, the county, and in the case of the 19th district, you know, we really need help. We have very high jobless numbers, much lower than some other parts of the country, but a lot of folks are feeling the pain from the recession. We've got, I mean, folks coming into the office on a daily basis who have lost their job, they then lose their house and their health care, and they need help from government. And I also, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. All right. A question I have, because I've had the privilege of moderating some panels with candidates up in Maryland in the primaries.
Yeah.
And one of the things I've seen up there, and I'm sure you have too, or in any state, as a matter of fact, you get into the primary debates or the primary discussions, you've got a lot of really sharp people with a lot of great ideas. There's, one of the last ones I did, it was up in Rockville, and I don't know, there were like 15, 16 candidates, something like
right,
that.
Right.
And nobody shows up to vote.
Sure.
You know, and so to me, the primary is probably the most important part of the electoral process. What the heck can you as a candidate, or can anybody as a candidate, do to get people interested? In fact, the people that were holding the debates before gave up.
Right.
Because literally not enough people would show up to come to them.
Right.
And here are the candidates. How do you get people to vote in primaries? And when is the primary?
We saw the most beautiful thing in 2008 in the elections. Folks coming out to vote, young voters who had just registered, getting out to vote for the first time. Didn't matter who they were voting for. We saw a level of activism that, you know, we haven't seen in a generation. And I'm hoping that that continues in 2010.
When is the primary, Roger?
The primary is in September. The general is
September what?
September 14th. 14th?
September 14th. Yeah.
Well, important. The most important question here is we're not going to be seeing any crazy immigration bills in Maryland, are we?
Well, we had to deal with the Real ID bill last year, and we did.
Tell
all
people what that is, the Real ID bill.
You know, the Real ID bill is legislation that requires some proof of residency requirements or some criteria that states have to adopt, and each state is dealing with it slightly differently. Maryland was not one of the first to sort of comply. We have
it's a federal law.
It is a federal law
that, the states have
that
to
it's
with.
A mandate on the states to comply. Now, some states like Arizona have sort of gone their own way on some of this stuff.
That's
and
a nice
I know,
way to
I know
put
you
it.
Guys have been talking about that.
We
heard it on the way over here in the car.
What do you think should be done in Maryland, if anything, about the issue of immigration, illegal immigrants, that kind of thing?
Personally, having worked with you on the judiciary, this is largely a federal issue.
Right.
Right.
And
right.
I don't think states have the authority to round folks up
we were
and
just
send
talking
them back
about
to wherever they came from.
Right.
My family came here 100 years ago. You know, it's sort of an American story. We all have one of those stories, you know. And, you know, so I think we need to deal with the challenges that we face right now as a society, as a culture, as a community. We have a large number of people may have gone to school here or work here, but for one reason or another are not documented and cannot fully transition into society to become, productive members of society or to maximize their effectiveness and realizing that American dream that we all, you know, strive for.
Can we get a little more explanation of this Real ID law?
That's federal.
But what is it? Is it a law that everybody has to have a real
each
ID?
Each one of the states, you know, is mandating that that folks actually prove their citizenship. And, you know, each state has taken a little bit of their own interpretation of this. And Maryland was one of the last
for what
five
age group?
States.
I mean, all the way down, how young?
I think what we did is when folks go to get driver's licenses, that we required some proof of residency, some other requirements, and it was very controversial.
So if you don't get a driver's license and you're 16, 17 years old...
If you can't prove residency in many states, you cannot get a driver's license.
Right.
And so we crafted, I think, a little bit of a compromise in Maryland that addressed that issue without, without unnecessarily interfering with our communities.
Without racial profiling.
But without that real ID, you get yanked away?
It becomes more difficult to get a driver's license.
No, I mean, do you get arrested without that real ID?
I don't think, states have the authority to arrest somebody because...
Does immigration?
The U.S. Immigration Service is tasked with
And let me throw this in because I was
that's frightening in and of itself.
Yeah. And let me throw this in because just say this, because when I was in law enforcement in the state of Maryland, what we did when we had people who we felt that maybe undocumented workers were, we were required to contact them. The state didn't do it. We didn't even do it. The state didn't do it. We contacted the immigration services, and they came down and they made a decision as to what they did. So we didn't even apply the law in the state of Maryland. But what I wanted to say, make a larger point, and that was this, that for people who are or legal immigrants here in America, in Maryland, D.C., et cetera, who feel that they've been treated unjustly. Because this is what happens, and the reason I say this is because I'm African American, and this is what happens in the African American community, and this is why a lot of African Americans vote. For this reason, if you feel as though you've been mistreated, often you'll feel powerless. Your power is in a ballot. One of the things about the Latino community that I know is the African-American community votes in very high numbers. The Latino community traditionally doesn't vote in as high of numbers and as high a percentage as the African-American community. The power is in the ballot. So people who are immigrants, who feel that this is unjust and feel that they need to have some power in this country, the thing they need to do is come to these elections. The thing they need to do is come to the ballot. Now, I'm not going to say...
But isn't that exactly...
Now, let me say this. I'm not going to say that they should vote against the Republicans.
I think actually...
I'm simply going to say, if somebody's giving you the shaft, hey, it's time to pay them back
in the
ballot.
I think the Republicans in Arizona may have passed this bill to try to keep people from coming to the ballot box, because they might be afraid that if they look a certain way, they're going to be picked up, and that's one less
vote. How are you going to ask somebody to register to vote if they're an illegal immigrant?
Even if they're legal, but they got a spouse or a kid or an uncle or a cousin.
But this is why it's so wrong, because... even if they're legal, their wife may not be, or their brother may not be, or their cousin may not be.
Well, see,
hold on. Before you continue all of this, I do want to. I know Roger only had a few moments with us.
Sorry,
we want to thank you very much.
We're going to keep going.
It is pretty raucous.
But I do want to thank Roger for coming here and say
guys.
That he's a good friend and colleague, and I want to wish you well. And
thank
I'm going to do it. I'm going to encourage everybody to go out and vote for Roger Mano. If you live in the 19th Church of Maryland, give him your vote September 14th.
Thank you.
All right. He's our friend, and he's an official raucous talker.
But you know,
I just. All righty. I just thought of something very interesting, and when I apply this to the African-American community, because when you brought up something that I didn't think about, if you're Latino and you're perfectly legal, you're legal, you've been here for generations, the idea that someone might hassle you just because you're legal could chill some of your rights.
Absolutely.
You may say, I don't want to go register, I don't want to go here because there are cops standing around and they're going to grab me. I'm legal, but what if they don't accept my
why
driver's license?
Why do you think in other states they put cops at...
What if your driver's license is expired by 10
look
days
at,
or so?
And look at the history of African Americans. Look at what's happened in the past where there were... there were cops put at
the polling places.
Sure. Look what happened in 2000. They did that in Miami.
They
played all kinds
Florida.
Of games, and they told people that we're going to be checking for warrants and if you paid your child support and things
traffic
to suppress
fines,
the
vote.
All
so
of which is untrue, by the
right.
way. Let's be very clear.
Right.
These are all ruses to keep people from voting.
But these things
they
work
untrue.
To suppress the vote of people of color.
Of course.
And the same thing is happening with the Latino community. And that's, again, what this law is about.
So
and
let's
crucial.
Go to the point that I promised everybody. I promised everybody in the second half.
A solution.
We were going to give our solutions. We were going to give the answer to all the problems so that people wouldn't have to worry about it anymore. We just do this, and then we move on and have other issues. So, dare I say it, this is going to hurt as I say it. President President Terry Kester.
Uh-oh.
Boy, that hurt. That just gave me a sore throat.
I'm crossing the border into Mexico.
Stormy throat.
I'm heading for Mexico, buddy.
President Kester.
Yeah.
What bill will you propose to Congress to deal with the immigration issue?
Well, first thing, I just want to point out that I'm moving to Costa Rica. You know.
You're the president.
Oh, well, so what?
We finally elected you, Terry. You're supposed to
and he runs out on
you're supposed to finally be happy with your country when they elect you.
With this Congress, even you want me to stay in the States? Are you kidding? Come on.
All right, who's your vice president? We'll just, they'll take over.
No, seriously, there is no simple, good answer. And this is part of the problem because Americans have been taught and particularly by the Republicans, to always look for the simple, you know, one-step answer. There isn't. It's a
sounds
very...
Sounds like you're abdicating responsibility, President
Kester.
It's a Kester.
Very...
Yeah, waffling politician. Those politicians.
I want a 2,000-page bill.
What would your bill do, President Kester?
My bill would, first of all, make sure... I think we should repeal that thing, and I'm maybe not correct.
The Constitution?
Law no.
The ID law. No, the real ID,
the ID law. I think that should go. You know, if you are born in a country, you should be a naturalized citizen. And I know that's taken advantage of sometimes, but so what? If you're born in the country, you're a citizen of America.
That's in the Constitution already.
Yes, I know. Why right. don't we let that happen? That's been removed, though, by current laws.
No, it hasn't.
Oh, yes, it has. In some states, it has.
No, it hasn't, Terry.
I think it
no,
has.
No.
Yes, it has.
I can assure you.
As President of the United States.
Mark, he's going to have the Secret Service.
You're worse than Bush, I swear.
He's going to send the CIA to take you out, buddy.
The law is there. And I assure you, even if you're illegal, if they're born on American soil, you are
no,
an American citizen.
No, Terry wrote an executive order that overturned the Constitution.
I'd say I'm impeaching you right now. But before I impeach you, President
you'll
Kester,
never get it to the Senate.
What
amnesty,
is your plan?
Amnesty has to be part of it.
Details.
Amnesty has to be part
I
of it.
I want details.
The amnesty, that's what I'm talking about.
So immediately everyone who's here undocumented becomes citizens in Terry T. Kester's universe?
If they show up, yes, and register so you can get them into the programs that have been set up. I mean, the Bush program.
You wander across the border and Terry Kester says you're a citizen.
The Bush program was not a bad program. Let's face it. It was not a bad
no
program.
No fines, nothing.
No. Fines, process, the whole bit.
Mark, but we do have to do this.
I mean, if there's something to be said for you've got to accept the reality that American citizens, particularly immigrants, who do go through the process, do feel rather strongly. You know, and there's some legitimacy in that. They study, they work hard, they pass the exam. There's no reason you can't make that opportunity. You make that opportunity available to all of the immigrants that are currently here.
But I think Terry, each of us who's president, Terry, I think you do have to tell us who your vice president would be.
It has to be my wife. I have no choice. It has to be.
What a cop-out. Cop-out.
It's not my first choice, but what can I do? What can I do?
Yeah. If there's anything scarier than President Kester, it has to be President Nixon.
You're right.
President Nixon.
Dan, rested and ready. Is that the way they say it?
Makes me tremble. Didn't we impeach you already?
Well, look.
I mean, my God, I can't believe he said he'd always come back. He said he'd always come
right.
back. And now.
And I'm not a crook.
I can't believe I'm actually saying this.
Well, you know what I'm thinking.
President Nixon.
Well, you know what I'm thinking.
What would you do?
Well, first of all, my predecessor, the previous president, I have to say, you thought Dick Cheney was in charge of the White House. His wife is going to be the vice president. This guy's nothing good but a figurehead.
He
ain't getting nothing done. We need to bring her up and ask her what she'd do.
All right, President Garland Nixon.
Okay.
What would you difference from President
Richard
Nixon?
You forgot to ask me
about
vice president.
I'll get to that. Okay. First, I want to hear your immigration plan.
Well, see, here's the problem, Mark. There's a big problem, and that is this. I got a problem with realism.
Another cop-out.
Big problem with realism. I'll say what I said to my students today. There really isn't an answer. And here's and let me tell you the problem.
Another cop-out.
Okay, here's the problem. Yeah. Okay, let's say amnesty. You say amnesty. The border isn't secure, so everybody just continues to wander across. If you cannot really have a solution until you've decided what you're going to do with the border. Because if you just say amnesty for everybody, then a lot of people will start traipsing across the border even more. That could be a problem. So
you also are copping out.
Yeah,
all right. I got to tell you something. Well, who's your vice president?
John Conyers. I'll go to him. He'll know.
All right. Okay, fine. Since
he's been around since 65 and he'll know.
Has been impeached. And President Nixon was already resigned from office.
Wait. If I'm impeached, like, my wife is now in charge, right? Well,
precisely.
Yeah. Really.
She was already running the place.
She may actually have an idea on immigration.
Nothing will change. She's already running
all
the country.
All I can say is, constitutionally, gentlemen, like Al Haig, I'm taking charge here now.
Oh.
And President Levine.
Al Haig,
who was he under again?
He was under Reagan.
I kind of thought so.
President Levine does have an immigration plan. I got to tell you, I do.
It's a bad one, but
you
it's
haven't heard it yet.
Okay, well, I'm just making an assumption. I'm just assuming it's like all the rest
we're
of your
campaigning
plans.
Here. We're campaigning. Are you Republican?
I'm a Democrat. Oh, okay. I am not copping out. Here's my plan.
Okay.
All right. Number one, there is a path to citizenship. We allow.
That's what I said.
You said amnesty for everyone immediately. You're easy. All right. Well, I'll ask your vice president that.
Compassionate.
But anyway. No. I believe there's a path to citizenship. I do believe that people who came here broke the law and they should pay a fine.
But we're in agreement.
Because I think there should be some way, you know, discouragement for people to come.
Okay.
But I think we cannot round up 14 million people.
Agreed.
There's a path to citizenship. If you have not committed a violent crime, if the only crime you have committed is walking across the border, you can pay your back taxes, pay a fine, become a citizen of the United States. Now, that deals with the people who are currently here.
Yeah.
Number two, we need to enforce workplace laws to make sure that even illegal immigrants are getting a minimum wage and are getting good safety conditions.
Yep.
This is not just because I happen to like illegal immigrants.
Can we give them health care,
and
too?
I care about humanity. Health care too, absolutely.
Single payer.
It's not really about them. If we treat illegal immigrants lesser than American citizens are harmed because they won't be able to get the jobs they want because somebody will be able to work for less.
Right.
So it's not doesn't just help the illegal immigrant. It also helps American citizens who are trying to work for a decent wage with health care. Okay.
You're doing all this campaigning using exactly my program. This
your
is
program
amazing.
Was amnesty for everyone. Your
program
but
I got to throw it.
I got more to my program.
But I got to change one thing.
Of course you do. President Levin's program is 2,000 pages long.
In the spirit of Dennis Kucinich, undocumented workers, there's no such thing as an illegal person.
Fine. Undocumented workers.
Thank you.
I'm okay with
that.
Thank you. Now, one more thing. How do we keep them? Because people are going to keep coming across the border. I am actually okay with some kind of security at the border. I don't
Oil spills will do it.
You know, whether it's
a
wall.
Gulf
of Mexico.
They won't be swimming in.
We have walls.
They won't be
swimming
in, that's for sure.
Yeah. But as far as I'm concerned, the best way to keep illegal immigrants from streaming across our borders is to punish employers. Is to say to because
Didn't I say that half an hour
the
ago?
The demand for wages.
Wake up, gang.
Yeah, the demand for wages, the demand for work is what gets them coming across our border. If we are to punish employers, sanction them heavily, even jail employers who knowingly hire illegal immigrants, that will cut off the demand. We'll help the people who are already here, kind of like the glass of spilled milk. You write the milk before you clean up the mess. But I think that will highly discourage people to come. And my vice president is someone who did a real good job before, Al Gore. Vote Levine Gore in after Obama in 2016.
But well, let me say this, Mark.
Come on, Jared, Levine Gore, 2016.
Hey. Something I thought up.
We're going to Costa Rica. Forget it.
The first part of your...
I want you to know your vice president just cheered for me.
Right. I know
Terry
that.
Tester.
Yeah, and the first part of your solution and Terry's solution, and I didn't really think about this, but if you grant some form of amnesty or whatever you want to call it, if you say to the people that are here, we'll get you paperwork, we'll get you legal, then there'll be enough people for whatever they need. They won't have to hire undocumented. When more people come off the across the border, there won't be a need for them. So they won't have the option of doing that. The idea of doing that won't be there because they'll have all the people they need. So I think
really easy to unionize illegal immigrants.
You know, and there's,
so they
there's
can join
one other
together.
Aspect that we've got to deal with too. But I mean, it is a complex issue, and that frankly is the drug trade. And again, you know, we're stuck with that somehow or other. We've got to deal with that because that is part of what's going into the whole corruption that involves the coyotes and everybody that's bringing the people across the border. I mean, it's part of the same machinery. So somehow that has to be faced, too. And, frankly, NAFTA has to be faced. It is complex.
Right.
And we can't ignore any of this to begin to solve it.
Now,
I'm not saying do it all at
once. We also have to deal with people's, with how, I mean, when I think of Arizona, frankly, the first thing I think of is when
Martin
I worked.
Martin Luther King's holiday?
No, that too. No, I think of the fact that when I worked in Congress with Roger Mano, by the way, I would get calls from this guy in Arizona who was, you know, he was not a member of my congressman's district or anything, and he was angry. And he said, we got to stop them coming across our border. And he said things much, much less nice than I just said. And he wanted to stop them. there are very angry people. Arizona is, after all, probably the place where most illegal immigrants cross. More so, you have very established Latino communities in New Mexico, in Texas, and in California. Probably less so in Arizona. Maybe they stand out a little bit more. I don't know what it is. But you have to ask yourself, in just a few minutes we have left, what it is that's making the people who don't want them so angry. Why is it that not just Governor Brewer had to sign this legislation, but even John McCain, a guy who, frankly, I disagree with him on most things about immigration, he was relatively, dare I say, liberal, and yep. yet even he had to back off to a 180-degree about-face and say, oh, yeah, I support this really harsh law. Why are people so angry? Is it just hard economic times?
Well, that was just purely politics there, because even, God forbid, Tom Tancredo ran from this law.
Really?
Tom Tancredo,
the leading anti-immigration.
Tom Tancredo.
But here's the thing. You say it's pure politics, Garland. What you're saying, in effect, is this kind of thing in Arizona is popular. I mean, that's why McCain had to run in support of it.
It's popular in Arizona. It's popular nationally. But it's popular in the South. There's no question of that. It's popular in the North. It's even popular amongst the African-American community.
We can't deny that. Is it economic?
Yes. It is racist. It is economic. And it plays on people's fears. And it is politically advantageous at this point in our divided, angry country to take these kind of positions. This is going to help that governor. Unless he gets embarrassed completely by the Supreme Court, which I hope he does. But if he doesn't, it's actually going to help them.
I think it's going to help the Democrats. Politically speaking, I think it's going to help the
Democrats.
Well,
I mean, no,
if they play it right, it will defy the Republican Party.
I think in the long run, it will help the Democrats. Latinos are about to become, if they haven't already, America's largest minority. It'd be great to welcome them into the great coalition that is the Democratic Party. And I think in the long run, Arizona is shooting itself in the foot.
Boy, are they going to be mad.
But we got to end the discussion here. I'm sorry. Our time is just about out.
Wait a minute.
It is. I'm sorry. Just about but, out. What? That's all the time we got, Terry.
Okay.
He's the president of the United States here.
You were impeached. So I want to thank, first of all, of course, our charming and super hardworking producer, Gladys Brooks.
Oh, yay. Gladys. Yay. Gladys.
And she is charming. She's wearing this really cute pink scarf that you get to see if you come next week to Ben's Next Door.
Also, if you don't want to see us, see Gladys.
I want to thank Ramon Grimaldi and Drew Franklin. He's amazing. He's right there on the phones right now. Drew does about 7 things with only 2 hands. Amazing guy. The people back in the studio, Cassandra Giddings, the board operator.
Yay,
Cassandra.
And I think T. Sturdivant is there as well.
If he ain't, he's
and
there
in
spirit.
And, of course, I've got to thank Ben's Next Door. Without Ben's Next Door, we couldn't be here week after week, Tuesday night at 7 p.m., particularly Ben's owner, Nizam Ali, without whose fervent support our radio show before a live audience just wouldn't be possible. Real quick, Garland, as we wrap up, where can people find you?
GarlandIn@gmail.com or Facebook me, Garland Nixon.
Terry, where can they find you? Quick.
Terry, TDKAOL.com.
Okay, and Mark Levine, I am also on Facebook. And in fact,
but no picture.
You can actually watch me on TV. I'll believe it or not, talking about immigration on the evil Fox News at 9:30 a.m.
Tomorrow morning,
you can watch me deal with this very topic against, I don't know, 2, 3, 6 conservatives, however many they'll be. We hope that everyone enjoyed this edition of the Rockets Caucus. We're here every Tuesday night at Ben's Next Door, or you can listen every Tuesday at 7 p.m. right on 89.3 WPFW. That's a wrap, folks.
All right.